Which luck?
I think we'll go under today.
Maybe you're gonna throw Robert Reed through.
I remember he did the perm very tight.
Well, now we know. We know the rest of the story.
That wasn't even a Jufro.
Believe okay. A million-dollar question on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire one time was, what was Carol Brady's maiden name?
And did you know it, I assume?
I actually did know it.
Wayne?
No, I'd heard of you.
What?
Anybody know?
No, who would know that?
Tyler.
Carol Tyler. Okay,
Carol
that's
Tyler.
Fantastic.
You're looking for you.
Okay, no, don't tell us anymore. We're starting. Did you hear the music? He must have missed the music. Yeah, that's right. Who would know? That's like doing a Millard Fillmore impersonation.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, that
was right on, man. It's fantastic. Who would know that stuff?
Bar mitzvahs with that.
All right. At some point in time, we need to go back into our archives and erase that show where Steve Clausen, and who would play you in the movie, said that Carrie would be played by Florence Henderson.
Wow.
You know and what did I say? What did I say?
It's in here.
Yeah. I know,
never
it is.
From my
what about Reese Witherspoon? I have a better taste than Clausen, so that should be.
Bar.
You should be happy about the Reese Witherspoon
kind. Nice. That's
thrilled.
And that's a good call, isn't it?
I think that's good. Think
yeah.
That's, who played Clausen, by the way, in the movie of.
Oh,
yeah.
I had someone
came
good.
Up with a bunch of jackasses. Yeah. I'm still thinking.
Emmett Smith. Yeah. Oh,
that's no, I can't remember.
That'd be good.
Jim Neighbors, I think.
Oh,
no, who was it? Was it him?
You know, I don't even recall.
Steve's
see,
version of Back
see,
Home.
You didn't care.
Off me. It just all rolls
oh,
off.
Oh, wow.
No, that would be a compliment.
Yeah, it would
okay.
be.
You okay. can have him.
Not in terms of looks.
Tom Poston, maybe, but
Tom
not Bob Newhart.
I watch Newhart on Sundays.
And that's good stuff.
They have Billy Capri in Cincinnati.
I'm telling you, the David Souter, the times I've been around him, he is, and he's from New Hampshire,
right
off that show. I mean, the guy should have been one of the oddballs from the show. You know,
maybe they based it loosely upon David.
I'm serious. Mm-hmm. I'm serious. I think I've told you before that one time a couple of us talking with him, and he told maybe it was an anecdote that he, for him, got fired up about, one of these real deadpan guys who.
Hold on now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then
here it
and
comes.
He went on, and it was about an 8-minute anecdote, which, you know. We're all kind of storytellers. That's a long time. That's got to be a good one. It's got to really much be your best one.
Clearly, line. There has to be a punchline.
Got to the end? Nothing. Not even forget the punchline. There was no point. It was like, okay.
It sounds like my marriage.
Moderately interesting.
It goes on a while and just kind of
fizzled out.
Just kind of lapsed at the end.
That's a Steve Martin line, isn't it?
Fell apart.
Yes, yes. Here's an idea.
People who tell a story, it's nice if they have a point.
Have a point. So much better for the
audience.
So much
more interesting for the listener.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that because we didn't mention last week a tribute to John Hughes.
You know what?
And you know what? That guy, I think I took him for granted too because when you started seeing all the movies that he did, that was a phenomenal career.
Uh-huh.
I mean, toward the end you had some.
I was right in that high school wheelhouse.
I lost track of
that
too.
That's my age group because we did 16 Candles and Breakfast Club.
That's
and all
the
that.
Best.
But then Planes, Trains, and Automobiles for
the best.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, best
scene.
It's my favorite
John Hughes movie. The scene at the rental car counter in St. Louis.
Oh my God!
When Steve Martin approaches Edie McClurg and she's going gobble gobble gobble.
Yeah.
He just blows up. She goes,
"You can get fucking rental car right now."
And she goes, "Ooh, sir."
Yeah, one of the greats.
You're fucked.
And what else was she in? What other John Hughes movie?
Edie McClurg.
She was principal in Ferris
Bueller. Yeah. She was the assistant.
Her maiden name is Styler. Actually.
Oh, God. Okay, enough of this.
She's actually Florence.
No, but here. Testament to John Hughes' popularity. A few months ago at the Biltmore, they have these outdoor movies series.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go over there one night because they're playing 16 Candles, and a friend of mine wants to go. So we go over there and got there about a half an hour before the movie started. There's no place to sit at the Biltmore.
Really?
I mean, people were sitting outside. They brought blankets. They brought kids. I mean, literally,
I
it was like
how those were going over.
It looked like the Million Man March at the
really
with white people.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
What it takes
absolutely.
To get
yes.
Out. Okay.
Yeah.
No more.
It was
that thing was brilliant all the way through.
It was really
all good. Okay.
Is.
Now the voice you heard we haven't introduced. Mark Cordes once again is
cool
called
us.
Away. Too cool for us. Called away to a gig. And, you know, he did call me, by the way, and he left me a message and said that he needed a recommendation for me. He'd given my name to a state legislator or something.
Uh-oh.
And so I don't think he got that gig.
Oh.
Because I would give him a good recommendation, but I don't think they think I'm that funny.
Russell Pierce.
Yeah, that's the problem.
He wanted it declared Mark Porter's
Depends
day.
Depends on the legislator, I think.
Oh, not in Arizona. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
anyway, so David Leibowitz joining us.
Yeah, a poor man's Mark Portis.
Yeah, well, you know. And
he's taller.
Now, you have been, you know, off the radio and off the air for a while and doing your PR gig.
Marketing, creative directing,
yeah.
PR, all
a
that
big
kind of stuff.
Twitterer, by the way.
Big,
so
yes.
All
yes.
You followers out there, we have lots of followers, and you should follow Lebo because he is much better at
no amount of minutia of my life
telling you about his
goes
life
uncommented
than
upon.
I am. I did tell you, by the way, my favorite response. I did the best I've ever done on Twitter and Facebook was when I was over in Italy in July, and I actually did try to, you know, say something every day of what was going on. And my friend Dan Stavlin, who was a tennis pro, one night, I don't know why, stupid, but I think after quite a few wines, we were looking out at the, and I described it, and sitting here, overlooking the Tuscan hills, drinking some nice Chianti, looking at the crescent moon, blah, 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 some bullshit.
Stars
like that.
Twinkling.
Yeah. And I got a response back from him, and it said, I just missed my plane at the Denver airport. We'll have to spend the night. Take that crescent moon and stick it up your ass. That was the highlight of our Twittering experience. And I'm sure if you just picture yourself, I'm going to have to stay here, and you get that, you go, yeah.
One man's beautiful Italy experience is another man's go screw yourself.
Right in the
behind. Exactly.
That's
not
right.
Good. Not good.
There you go.
So anyway, you've been out there. First, tell us about that corporate world, because I mean, you haven't been in the corporate world, because
yeah.
there's the newspapers, and certainly radio is a corporate world as well. But this is a little different. It's a little more entrepreneurial. And then speaking of that, the big news is
I'm going to try anyway.
Great.
I don't know if there, you know, if there's valet parking over at your firm, but I mean, I can come over. I can park. I can drive a stick. I can back
okay.
up.
That's
I mean,
good.
You know, stuff like that. But no, I mean, it's been like a 4-year education on
right.
how marketing works and how public relations works and social media. And you know, you do it long enough in an institution where you know there's 40 or 50 people, and you say to yourself, well, there's got to be a better way to do this. So I'm going to go out and explore if there's really a better way.
Great.
Or explore poverty, one or the other. But it seems like in this economy where every client you have, I mean, no matter what you're doing, everybody wants to do it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I can be the quality, inexpensive, efficient, speedy service
that's an
provider.
Advantage, not having the big overhead that the big
Yeah, I mean, no overhead, you know, which is problematic. And, you know, and then not having like a team of 20 people
right.
on, you know, somebody over there, you know, if you're out there in an agency world and somebody says, hey, you know, we want to promote Grant Woods for governor or something like that, the first thing you do is, hey, let's have a meeting of 25 people
right.
and all get together and kind of brainstorm on this. And frankly, most of those brainstorms are really kind of like drizzles at best. Clausen's been in some of those. And he says, I'm not saying anything. No, it's really been a great experience. But after a while, you get to the end of things. I mean, I'm sure when you're at the end of being AG, mm-hmm. and the question was, well, am I going to run again for something? Am I
right.
going to do something else? I mean, sometimes, you know, your mind is made up by other things outside of just job
yes.
satisfaction. You say, okay, I've done this. It's time to try a different chapter.
Yeah, when I look at my career, and I really haven't, I didn't plan it this way, but this is not unusual for people who, you know, aren't over 65. We talk about our parents' generation. They pretty much had the same job their whole life. That's really not the case for most people anymore. And if I look at my career, you know, I was 3 years of the public defender. Then I was, how many years on my own? 8 years in private practice, 8 years as attorney general. Now I've been, you know, 10 years in private practice.
That's
so I have
long?
Gone in those. Yeah,
Holmes.
Yeah, more than that.
Smokes.
Well, 11 years on now. Yeah, I know. You would a lot of action going on at the AG's office, isn't there? Oh,
there is. No, not really.
Not really.
Wow.
Wow,
you know,
it's right.
That's, you know,
that's
you know what's interesting to me about the, and I don't mean to talk, you know, to
yeah.
talk crap about Terry Goddard. I think
right.
is a great guy, but I've talked to a ton of Democratic political people. And I know you talk to some of the same folks.
Right.
And every one of them says, you know, Terry, he's got a lock in the Democratic nomination. I don't know about his candidacy.
Yeah.
Right.
Not a lot of excitement.
And just, just that feeling of, like, if everybody is saying, I don't know about his candidacy, then why isn't someone saying, I got to challenge this guy because the lock on the candidacy of a guy who everybody is saying, I don't know, is odd to me. Because if you look at the Republican side, I mean, present company excluded, of course, unless Clausen gets in or whatever.
Yes. that is not going to happen.
Is Brewer, she's not really an intimidating candidate.
Right.
Andy Thomas, not an intimidating candidate. So if I'm a Democrat, I'm thinking to myself, hey, what better time than now?
Absolutely. And the Republicans are going to have a big problem in this state in 2010 because they have shown themselves incapable of leading, at least to this point in time. It's not over yet, but as we're taping, they still don't have a budget. Apparently, we're taping on a Monday. Today was the day that they thought they would get this done if they're going to get it done, and they're not going to get it done. So, it's the door's wide open.
You ever get involved in budget negotiations and stuff like that? I mean, is that as much of an absolute cluster as it appears to be from the outside?
Well, let me tell you.
I mean, I go home, I say, this week I'm going to make $200 bucks, and I'm going to spend $1,000. So I charge a bunch of stuff on MasterCard, and we're done with it.
Well, that's
the state can't do that.
Well, then do it already. Get it done with. No. That's good analogy, and that's pretty much what the federal government does.
Sure.
But in Arizona, we don't really have a constitutional amendment or clause that says that we have to balance a budget. But in practical effect, that is it. Probably no one's interested in that. But everyone says constitutionally we have to balance a budget. That's not true. When the Constitution was adopted in Arizona, they had a debt, but they had a debt limit. So they allowed for it. They said there was a debt limit, and it's in the hundreds of thousands. I can't remember what it is, 400,000 or something. Well, that made sense in 1912, but today they've never raised it. Okay, so that's interesting, because if you talk about the intent of the founding fathers, that was a lot of money then. So they understood that you could have a debt as a government, but politicians being what they are, just like they never give pay raises, they've never changed that debt. So the practical effect is they have to balance the budget. Okay, there's problem number one. Problem number two is you've basically in round numbers, it's just a little old now, but you've got, if you've got a $9 billion budget, you've got $6 billion in revenue. That's a monstrous problem. It's an outrageous problem. Okay. Now, this is what's interesting that I want us to talk about. I think there's an analogy here to what's going on in Congress as of today on the health care debate. And this is a problem that Obama has. He's going to have the same problem that Brewer has. So let's first look at Brewer. Brewer's problem is she's got to govern. She can't just go back to her district and say, like all the Democrats, no one would talk to us, and it's all the Republicans' fault. She can't be like Ron Gould or some of these far-right people and go back to the district and say, by God, I held the line, and I didn't give in to the people who wanted a temporary tax. So those people all get reelected because that's what their little group of people want to hear. The governor has to govern. So that really means you've got in the Senate a handful of people that it comes down to them. If the Democrats don't want to play, then you try to pick off one of them. They've tried that. Generally in this state, it's been the Navajo representatives. You'd go try to pick one of them off because they can pretty much...
Bad metaphor, by the way, picking off.
We'll pick them off. Well, usually they were the ones doing the picking.
Metaphorically, not with a bow and arrow or anything.
So they tried that, I believe, the last week. That didn't work. They picked a few others and said, well, how about if we do this for your district? Classic. I mean, buying off, basically.
Yeah, sure.
Hasn't worked. Then you go to... Then you're dealt with some just real tough nuts. And so what do you do? Well, I don't know. They do not know what to do right now. Okay, so that's what's going on here. Now let's go to the healthcare debate. The problem Obama, it seems to me, that he's having here is the public option appears to be something that can't get through the Senate. As we've discussed on this show, Steve's like Obama's biggest fan. I don't know if you knew that. But... I told him he was in trouble, the president was in trouble on health care when he can't persuade someone like me who wants to be supportive of him, but it's not possible for me on that public option. Although, I think if you drop the public option, kind of take a middle ground here, go for maybe a Switzerland approach rather than a Canadian approach, something like that, I think this could work. What's his problem? And you see over the weekend, yesterday, Sunday, they started to back off of that. Yeah. Now what's happened today? The liberals,
the lefties freak out.
Now say, They're progressives, by the way.
They're not liberal anymore.
Yeah, no, I never even heard that word progressive in American politics till recently, when liberal is death. So the progressives now say, hey, I'm not voting for that. I won't vote for anything if the public option's not in it. That means that they could very well wind up with nothing, which if you're a supporter of health care reform, that would be pretty outrageous. So here's the president with all of his skills. I mean, look, and I'm going to go back to Brewer. No one can doubt the skills the president has in pretty much every category. He's super smart. He's great with people. He's a tremendous speaker. He understands politics. We'll see what he does on this. He's got a real tough job. Now, let's go to Brewer. She's not as good as the president in any of those political categories. So it's hard to expect her to be able to do it. And I don't know what's going to happen. The difference is if health care fails, okay, we move on to the next
one. Yeah, the budget fails.
I honestly, no one knows what to do.
But I like the way you sketch it out. But wouldn't you say, though, that in both cases, the problem is elected officials who are more concerned with what's good for them and their narrow constituency than what's good for the country?
Absolutely.
And that to me is the fundamental problem.
I think across
government today.
I agree, and I think with Congress that's true, and I think that's true with here in this state. Again, these people who think that Brewer is some big, you know, tax advocate.
Are you kidding? Look at her career for 20 years.
I mean, she's been so conservative. Remember, she voted against the impeachment of Evan Meekum. Okay, she was one of the just few people who said no, no, no. She voted no on all of them, you know. And now she was from the West Valley, you know, his neighborhood and all that. This is not someone who has supported taxes. But again, what do you do? You got to, let's just look at round numbers. If it's 9 and 6, you got to get to 9, and you've only got 6. What do you do? Well, the rockheads will say just slash everything. You can't do that. That's not going to work. I mean, we got kids going to school this week, last week, next week. Good luck on that. What do you want to have? 60 people in the classroom?
They've already got 45
it's
and a lot of
packed already.
I know, kids sitting on the floor.
Let's go to the next. You know, go to healthcare, go to criminal justice, police, go to cities and towns. It's really not a viable option. Look, I'm totally anti-tax as well, and the temporary tax idea is a big joke.
There's nothing temporary about it.
No, it's never happened. Yeah. You know, hopefully
they never go away. That's
they
for sure.
Never go away. I mentioned before that Coronado Toll Bridge. I love that. That thing was up like 50 years. It was still taking tolls. So isn't this paid for yet?
Yeah.
Oh, well. You know, I guess not. So anyway, that's my diatribe on that. Now, Steve, are you disappointed in the president for backing off? That's kind of a trial balloon. The president hasn't said it yet. Actually, the president did pretty much say
that.
The
stuff I saw today said was basically saying that he's now they're backing off.
Right,
and it's, we're not backing off.
Well, it started yesterday.
Here's what he did. He did. He was it Colorado? He was at wherever he was over the weekend.
Yeah, Grand Junction.
Before he came here, he said, "Look, the public option is just a quote sliver. It's just a part of it. Even if we don't get that, blah blah blah, all this other stuff." And then his aides go out on the Sunday shows, and they
Sibelius basically said. Public option. That's not it.
Started like this email chain from the White House. Yesterday's after Sibelius appeared, I think it was CNN or whatever.
CNN,
whatever show was on. And then the White House came out and somebody anonymously said, no, she simply misspoke. She still supports what the president's saying. And then somebody came out and said, no, this is, you know, she's still. Anyway, it was just one thing after another. So the whole thing has just kind of gotten confused. But in terms of the public option, I know one of the other options out there right now is this so-called co-op. That Ken Conrad, the senator from North Dakota, is. I need to learn a little bit more about that before I take a position on it. I'm still not sure it's dead. It's hanging on by a thread if it's not. I agree with that. But I still think he is going to win some kind of a health care reform this year.
I hope so. He should. But you would think he would because, again, you don't want to go all the way out there on this health care, which, I mean, he put all in on this for some reason.
I don't really understand why you go all in. Like
I've never understood that. I don't know. Yeah, firsthand, right up the bat, all in. We have to have this.
If I watched the World Series of Poker and that happened, I mean, the whole show would be like 11 seconds long.
Someone told me they saw Charles Barkley on one of these. He did big celebrity World Series of Poker thing.
God.
And he had like a pair of fours or something like that. And he ended up, and the other guy, and there were like three cards showing all were over him, a queen, all this other stuff. And the other guy went all in, and Charles called him.
Why? And he's out. And later he went, God, I think that was a bad move.
I had two fours. Yeah. Right. That explains.
No, it was classic Charles. After he goes, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Yeah, that wasn't a good move. Stupid.
That explains why he owed that casino in Vegas a few dollars at one time.
He's telling Johnny Chan, hurry up, I got to get around the corner here. Let's play the sand out really fast.
Come on now.
Come on.
But I don't know why he went all in anyway. But again, I told you, I would not vote for the public option in a million years. I think it's a horrible idea, and I think at the end of the day, it would end up, we would go, let's go forward 20 years, and this is something you cannot make a mistake on. But getting a huge government program, government bureaucracy in place, it will never go away. It's not like other issues. You can say, Obama, well, I don't like what he did here. The debt is too high. Okay, we get a new president, a new Congress. You can start knocking out that debt. We can change things. You can change policies, even foreign policy. You can go in. I mean, you can change foreign policy with a new leader. You will not get rid of this stupid public option. If it's in, it'll be there the rest of our lives. And I think it's a huge mistake. That's the last thing I want the government involved in. But again, that's not to say that you can't have regulation, that you can't come up with, again, a more, you know, Swiss sort of mode here where you have the co-ops and all that.
There's got to be something in between.
And it's a first step. It's a big step, and hopefully it will work. And if that doesn't work and the insurance companies are able to game that, then maybe you do come back and say, look, we tried a middle ground. You either got to go all or nothing.
I mean, the scary thing to me about the public option, besides the fact that now the government is running something and they're not really all that great at running things, is the notion, if you look at, like, you know, America's largest private employer, Walmart,
right?
They've already managed to set up a situation where the American public subsidizes the health care of their employees who simply don't make enough money to kind of get benefits.
This is what everybody will do.
Well, exactly.
There's a huge incentive to just pump people off of employer.
Right.
Well, we didn't want that. We didn't want that to happen. We didn't want a single-payer system, but that's what will happen. I believe it will happen.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember is that we don't know what the final bill is going to look like. This thing is still being hashed out in Congress right now. So what comes up a month from now may look totally different.
There was another mistake he made, though, and I do not understand that either. Did anyone have an explanation for that? Why the president on the stimulus money and how it was going to be spent on health care, on these big things, why he comes up with the big plan, puts everything out there, all his prestige, and then he says, I'm going to leave it to the Congress to write in the details, and then we'll deal with it. And maybe that's just, again, a testament to how screwed up the situation is with Congress, and he's got to appease the liberals there, or he's going to get nothing.
He's playing sports agent. He's playing, okay, I want $50 million, knowing full well he might walk away with 25 and a, you know, suite on the road. Fine, but he'll take that, and he knows what he wants at bare minimum, so he's going to ask for the world, and then as everybody takes pieces away from what he wants, he'll...
Some of that...
As soon as it gets down to what he wants, he'll let it go. And maybe it's that his ego's not... You know, he doesn't really want it to be all about he saved health care.
Right.
You know, whereas maybe Hillary Clinton wanted to save health care.
I give him credit. I don't think that ego's... I don't think that's the problem, but I think let's just take the effort on... where the stimulus money is going to be spent, I don't see why that was handled the way it was, because it was pretty much wasted.
Right. Feels that way. The part of healthcare where they're really getting their asses beat, which surprises me, is you look back to the 2008 campaign, you have to say, okay, the Obama team, they were masterful when it came to using social media, when it came to using blogs, came to using the web to get information out there in an unfiltered way. And now the right is basically beheading healthcare with death panel emails sorts of sort of subversive communication, and they're not out there at all addressing it. I mean, if you're just going to let the lies happen and never address them.
They've tried. They've gone on the websites now and everything, but, you know, the other thing is, you know, it works both ways now.
Oh, yeah.
And when these people show up, I don't care who got them out there. I mean, the left certainly got Acorn out there at all these damn things, and they get the union members. So if the right gets their people out, it's just like back to Arizona. You know, everybody complains that, let's just take the Republican Party, that let's take my situation. If I was going to run for governor or any statewide office again, if you told me 100% of the registered Republicans were going to vote in the primary, forget independents. independents are great for me. But yeah. if you just said every registered Republican in Arizona will vote in the primary, I'll tell you I'm going to win. I can win that race against a lot of people. Hmm. But if you tell me 12% are going to vote, and which 12% those are, good luck on that. Sure. That's impossible to win unless you're, just right in there with that 12%.
Yeah.
So, but here's my point. My point is, whose fault is that? That it's the 88% who don't go vote.
Mm.
So you can't blame. Everyone's always like, oh, these people, who elect the wrong ghouls and all that. What are you going to do about it?
I've kind of revised. I used to have like a 10-80-10 theory about politics in Arizona. It was like 10% of the people on the right are complete whack jobs. 10% of the people on the left are complete whack jobs. But they're really loud.
Yes.
And the rest of us, the 80%, we're in the middle and we're just kind of sifting through issues and trying to figure stuff out. Now I'm down to 20-60-20. But those 40% on the fringe, they're so loud now that they basically, it used to, people always say, well, you win elections in the middle. Mm-hmm. Well, if you get there. Right. But you win primaries and everything else on the fringe.
That brings me to another issue here that I have. That certainly I've been, thinking about. And what do you guys think? And forget me, but just say a person in general, a qualified candidate, somebody who's got something going. Can an independent win a statewide race in Arizona now? Given that, because the good thing is for the independent is, one, obviously we look at the numbers, and the independents are vast. They may become the majority party here, if so-called. So you have a huge number of people who are registered independent. The advantage is you're automatically in the general. Mm-hmm. So Republicans battle it out. The Democrats may or may not battle it out. You're an independent. You are on that general ballot. You don't have that problem of having to go up to Kingman and convince the McVeigh family that, you're their guy.
Don't tread on
I've
me.
I've been there, believe
your,
me. You know.
Your nose and toes flip-flops and don't
seriously,
tread on me t-shirt.
Really
you should
popular.
Vote for me. Seriously, it's great. I'm your guy.
You can if you raise money like Obama did in this election. Because, he reached every single person. The people who felt like if they gave him $5, they had...
The other thing is you can run clean here. You don't have it could work both ways. You could raise a lot of money or you could run clean.
If clean remains part of the system.
Yeah, right. But can you win? Because the downside is there's so many people who vote Republican just because it's the Republican. And they vote Democrat just because it's Democrat. So it's like when I ran for AG in 1990. People forget Meekum ran for governor, and there was a Meekum candidate for attorney general who was out there just being a complete jackass. I mean, just an unbelievable clown. And yet, we knew he was, unfortunately for me, those would be my votes because the Meekum people did not like, not the jackass vote, but the Meekum people did not like the incumbent attorney general because he'd gone after them. Yeah. So, I'm just saying, you start doing the math and you go, okay, we're going to take 15%, whatever he got something like that, and of your vote, and we're going to take that off the top, give it to somebody else. Okay, that's not good.
Yeah.
15, now there's not a big margin. So if you take those people who are going to vote Republican, vote Democrat, and you do not have a shot at them, can you win?
Well, I think the indie problem is, when it comes to Election Day, the R's and the D's, no matter what jackass is running, they have a tremendous grassroots get-out-the-vote effort. Yep. They're driving people to the polls, and they're making sure that grandma and son city and labor unions, they're making sure those people go vote.
Yep.
Well, if you're independent and you don't have any grassroots structure to get people out there, that's a problem. Now, if it's a high-profile independent who has a chance to carve off a substantial number of Republican votes or Democratic votes or even better, both
–
that could work, particularly if it's a low turnout election. Mm-hmm. If you get one of those elections where a lot of people don't show up because it's not a presidential race or any of that stuff, I think you increase your chances. So I think it has to be a perfect storm, but it could happen.
Yeah. It's got to be the right candidate. You're one of the few people, I think, that could run as an independent and win. And I'm trying to think here in the state of Arizona who else I would put in that. Maybe like a Jerry Colangelo.
Right.
If he would run as an independent, because he has so much respect from everybody in the state. He's got business acumen. He is a leader. There is no question about
it. Do something new, something
but
different.
But it has to be a person of that stature. It's like California, the recall election. Mm-hmm. The only reason Arnold Schwarzenegger is governor as a Republican in California is because he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. If he's any other type of Republican, even the ones running in 2010, they're not going to win.
Sure.
But he's Arnold.
Well, this is the irony of the Republican Party in the United States, but... I'm telling you, it's true in Arizona, just as it's it's really true in California. They will not nominate, as a rule, the type of person who can win the election.
Right.
And Schwarzenegger, you're right, is the only sort of Republican who could win the governor's race in California, and he wouldn't have had a prayer in the primary. Mm-hmm. They would rather nominate, they would have nominated some bozo who Gray Davis could have defeated, rather than, God forbid, nominating Schwarzenegger, who could actually win. You know, what an odd concept. They'd rather have a guy in there who they disagree with literally 85-90% of the time than have their own guy, Republican, in there who they disagree with 30% of the time, 35% of the time. It's mind-boggling. But I'm telling you, Arizona's the same way. Why did they nominate Lynn Munsell? Why did they nominate Lynn Munsell against Jan Napolitano?
I'm still asking myself that. Right. Why?
Could Napolitano have been defeated? Would have been difficult? Yes, she could have been defeated. Not by Lynn Munsell.
Right. He had the organization and structure in place to win 20% of the vote to win the primary.
Don't forget charisma. Right.
Oh, yeah, charisma. I'll give you a candidate on a national scale who I think could make a serious run at the White House as an independent. Yeah. Colin Powell.
Sure. In the old days, not today.
No, but he's a guy of that stature.
Sure, 10 years ago, timing was right.
But it has to be somebody of that magnitude.
Well, let me give you the pitch. I mean, let's just say you were running, and you're in the public relations world.
I'll vote for Lebo.
Okay, but think about it. I think this is an attractive message in this day and age in the country, but in Arizona as well. I think the way an independent would do it is you would say, look, here's the deal. This is what I'm going to try to do over the next 4 years. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is it. This is where I stand on it, and I'm going to be an activist. We're going to go out there, so let's say education. We're going to reduce class size. We're going to attract a private liberal arts university. We're going to make Arizona State great. We're going to whatever your pitch is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to bring in the best and the brightest. I could care less if they're Republicans or Democrats. Mm-hmm. Could care less. I will work with anyone at the legislature from either party who will help do that. Mm-hmm. Other issues that come up, I'll use my best judgment. That's all I can tell you. Now, if that appeals to you, you should vote for me. If it doesn't, please vote for one of these other two if you want business as usual, because that's business as usual. We know that. To me,
that wins.
That's the sort of message that could
get. I mean, I think you just couch it like I'm going to take the best parts of both parties.
Right.
The stuff that's always resonated with me.
Yes.
I'm going to take the best people from both parties.
Yes.
And we're going to go ahead and we're going to accomplish these things. And it's in the same way that you would accomplish them at your house.
Right.
If you got married and you had stuff, that you had those 5 or 10 things that you and your wife wanted to accomplish, you would just knock them off at the kitchen table.
Yes.
That's just how we're going to run.
We're going to get it done.
One of the other things, when you had the 2010 in terms of who's running, you know, everybody goes, is it going to be a Republican year? Is it going to be a Democratic year? And traditionally it should be a Republican year because the Democrats did so well in 08. There are some analysts speculating it is not going to be either a Republican or Democratic year next year. It is going to be a non-incumbent outsider year.
Sure. That's always attractive.
Can either side point to an accomplishment at this point? Really?
Well, I mean, Obama can point to the stimulus package. Foreign policy. I mean, I think America's better off today than we were a year ago.
I think Obama on foreign policy
can either party point to an accomplishment?
No, it's one man. I mean, the Congress, I mean, it wouldn't bother me to see all of them go.
Y'all, me neither. I'd love to start over.
You know, kind of
except for Trent Franks.
No, I mean, there was Harry Mitchell, I think, is a good decent guy.
I have the last thing on Obama here, because I do have one real question mark on his judgment. Now, and maybe sometimes leaders like this do something and it's just bad staff or bad advice, but he went to Macayo's. What do you think about that?
Did he really?
Yeah.
Macayo's on Central.
Yeah, Macayo's on Central.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Well, somebody just told him to go there. That's the thing. And he said,
it's
sure.
It's okay.
I mean, it could have went to Applebee's. You know, I mean, that would have been even worse, really.
Wow.
What do you think about Macayo's?
Drove through McDonald's over on Central.
Yeah,
Avenue.
I know. It's
clearly
very
Bush wins the Mexican restaurant
with TP.
He
went to TP. TP
was better.
Well, they both went for the heavy grease.
Because you know there had to have been really like an hour, 2 hours
discussion.
A team of advisors sat around discussing what Mexican food seems like.
You should have done Rosita's on McDowell.
Mexican is good.
Carolina's. Go out to Waitos.
Barrio or Waitos. He's not going to jail.
Why not?
I don't know.
Here, I'll throw some really
should have gone to Waitos.
Maybe it's a security issue.
Well, it's easier. He couldn't gone to Barrio.
No, it's not that, but that Mikado has Barrio's no windows.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What was the issue?
He said security because there's no windows there.
I say that because look at these nuts that turned out here in downtown Phoenix. There's one guy walking around with an assault rifle in downtown Phoenix.
I'm saying that's not it.
No, I just... The status problem.
Does anyone think that was it?
No.
No windows.
I'm just throwing it out.
Maybe it was just easy to spot. It's a pink pyramidal structure.
You know, hey,
quite
Gary,
honestly, this is perhaps the worst architecture.
Do you remember the time I got the call at the office and the AG's office, and John Voight wanted to have lunch with me?
Yes.
Remember that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what? Why would John Voight want to have lunch with me? You know. Now, as it turns out, in retrospect, he's a Republican and all that. I knew none of that stuff. You know. Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
Missed it.
Who knew? So anyway,
she's no Marie Osmond.
They called me and I said, "Oh yeah, we got to get to Marie Osmond." I said, "What?
Why would John Voight
when I have lunch with him? He does. He really wants to meet you." So anyway, he came up to the office, and then we went down to like Sam's Cafe over here at Arizona Center, right?
Yeah.
So at the time, and so we had to kind of warn him. At the time, I was like under a little security detail for some threats, you know. In a way, you know, I didn't put a lot of stock into it, but enough that we had a few security guys around, you know. So he was couldn't have been a nicer guy. So we go sit in the corner at Sam's Cafe, and he's so nice. As we get about halfway through, and he goes, "Hey, you know, Grant, you're the expert on this. You know, I'm an actor. I don't know anything about, you know, security or law enforcement, but, you know, is this a good spot to be sitting? Because it's all windows." Good point.
You never know.
I'm an idiot.
A car backfires and Grant falls into
yeah.
his suit.
Oh, right. It could not have been a worse spot to sit, and like a dumbass, there
which
I am.
Which buffoon sat you there?
Me buffoon.
Oh, I thought maybe this
the security guy.
John Voight was still in the wheelchair from coming
they
home.
They didn't know any better.
Not only that, but you also look for exit strategies.
Nothing.
I've gone through some
nothing.
Of this before.
Trust me, that's one of the reasons I always rejected all that security, because you either got to do it in a massive way to do it right, or just forget it. You know, I had to have like a couple guys in case some guy came and...
Right, a couple of our investigators in
the back.
Yeah.
I saw Janet at the airport one day. And I think I was flying to LA or something like that. So she's sitting there, and she's like by herself in this little, you know, little area, and you know, all security guys are like 50 feet away, all looking at her.
Right.
She's reading some horrendous novel, and I'm thinking to myself, like, what good is the security if you're 50 or 100 feet away? Because she'll be dead before you can get over.
I know. That's again, that was my point.
So
that's why
I don't really seem
no
like it's – look, you can't have it both ways. I mean,
no,
you
got to do it all out or just forget it. So I chose –
what do you think of a super high-profile person who might be like hunted by Al-Qaeda? Like Phil Gordon, for example.
He has tremendous – he has amazing security.
Every time I see them there, he's got all the security around him and stuff. I'm assuming it's to stop Phil from attacking people around him. I don't know.
You know, you say that and you laugh about it. Look what happened to the Milwaukee mayor this weekend.
Brought it on himself. For
well,
God's
I know.
Jumped into a domestic violence dispute.
I know, but still, he's hospitalized, and if
a
security staff had been there,
I just have to say, I mean, so if the Milwaukee mayor is there with security, does he tell the security guys to jump in and beat that dude's ass?
No, but they certainly would have.
Take care of that, would you?
Yeah,
you know, they would have prevented him from getting beaten up, and I'm sure have been able to get. You know, there were security officers there with him. They would have intervened. So
I always assume. Look, you know. We've all had threats and stuff like that.
Yeah, because Carrie always has to – she has to hold our Woody. And we're going to move into the sports world. We have a – before we leave, we're going to talk –
nice Woody.
Thanks.
We're going to talk about Michael Vick.
It's big. Bigger than I thought it would be.
It looks bigger on the video. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yes. Okay, you ready? Okay, let's do this thing. Have you got it?
Yeah.
Carrie's got a Woody.
Do you have to?
You have to.
Do.
Sorry.
Wow. You ever hear
it was fun.
Lines,
just leave it.
You ever hear lines thrown out so many in one show that literally thud?
Yeah. Hello, is this thing on?
You can hear them thud.
And crickets.
The hell?
All right, I'll shut up.
Crickets, that's right. Okay. All right, let's do this.
My strange Florence Henderson fetish.
No, that's – ooh, wow. I wondered what was going on there. Okay, here we go. This week's Woody goes to – Y.E. Yang.
Aww.
Now, think of the storied history of golf's major champions. Nicklaus, Palmer, Hogan, Snead, Tiger Woods. Think of the great PGA tournament champions of the past. Storied names like Walter Hagen, Byron Nelson, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. And now, one more great name, Y.E. Yang. Come on, get serious. This is an IQ test. Which name doesn't belong?
But I guess it does belong if he was the one holding up the wannabe trophy after beating Tiger in a final round head-to-head matchup where Tiger started with the lead. There it was. We're on the 17th hole. Tiger down by one. And you just know, here comes the impossible, ridiculous shot that's going to win the tournament. And there it was. By Y.E. frigging Yang. What the hell? This finish was a dog and not the kind they stew up in Korea. Come on. Look, I'm usually all for the underdogs. You know that. I'm just not for them when they're against my nephew, Tiger. Now, during the early days when he was a kid and I was working on his swing over at the Mesa Country Club, I knew he was something special. What's so special about Y.E. Yang? Nothing. He doesn't even have a first name. Who's his hero? Y.A. Tittle? It's weak. Initials for a first name are sometimes cool, sometimes not. Take J.D. Salinger, yes.
Hayward,
no. B.J. Surhoff, yes. $5, no. Okay. And some are never cool, i.e. Y.E. So let's get back to the big guys squaring off like it used to be. Palmer versus Nicklaus, Hogan versus Snead, Watson versus Faldo, not Y.E. Yang versus Frank Licklider.
What the hell? Wow, there's a match.
Bring in the shark, send back the soybeans. PGA champ Y.E. Yang gets Tiger and gets a Woody.
Wow.
Oh, yes. Woo.
That was one of the better bits of writing I've heard here.
That is. That was very good.
Thank you very much.
There's another segment for
Y-E
you.
Yang.
First syllable. You had to know. Letters is first names.
I blame you for it, Lebo.
When he stepped up at 18, I thought he's going to hit it like in a tree.
Oh, it's going to be gonna Nicholson. Hit it in a lake. It's going to be super Shank.
It's going to be, yeah. It's going to be.
Oh, he missed. And there's one.
Did you read his comments? He said, and you know, it's brilliant, but it's crazy. He goes, you know, I just figured, what's the worst that can happen? I lose to Tiger Woods in a major at the end.
That's
so
way
what?
Too sensible.
It almost looked like Tiger early on, when he played pretty well the first couple of holes, mm-hmm. It looked like he was just thinking, you know, I'll stick around. Yeah. And this guy will crack.
Right.
And he never went away.
Well,
he
they
never
all do.
Cracked. Yeah, he never went away.
Sick.
Well, and by the way, he cleared the water by, like, what, that much?
Yeah,
I mean, there's your tournament.
I just kept looking at him thinking, Donger need food.
Oh,
the entire time.
What's your first name? Long. What's
that
your middle name?
Awesome.
No, I blame Lebo for it because early on, midway through the tournament, you posted something like, "I wish I had half the greatness of Tiger." Whatever.
Said,
it was.
Could you imagine how good, how great if life would be if you were as good at anything as Tiger Woods is at golf?
Yeah, no.
And now I found out that apparently I am.
You know what? No, he just he's human. I made this is one of the greatest decisions of my life because sports is very important to me. And right when Tiger started, I mean, first year on the tour, you could tell, yeah, this could be big, right? And I have to admit, I wasn't that crazy about him. I was like, I don't know about this guy and, you know, the child prodigy. And he was starting to bug me. And then I had a revelation. My revelation was, he's probably going to be winning tournaments the rest of my fucking life.
Right.
Why don't I make him my guy? I can have a lifetime of misery hating this guy, or I can win all the time.
All the time.
And so I adopted him. I said, this is my guy.
Hits
he's my
wagon.
Nephew.
Makes it easy.
And I've had 70 wins. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and you love those headline, Woods wins Masters.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like,
we
that's you.
Cut him out. It was so obnoxious.
Yeah.
He cut him out like on my desk. Woods brilliant again. There in the morning. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that was never in
Woods
anything
awesome.
But the sports section.
Handsome, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Yes.
Nice.
No,
that Woods nail supermodel.
Exactly.
I love those.
Another last name needs to be Brady for that.
Yeah. What? Back
Tom
to the Brady. Oh, I think McCarroll
Tom,
Brady
again.
Oh, that's it. Tom Brady.
Okay. Carrie, right. We know. Carrie's got to go to a parent
Enjoy
teacher.
The parent teacher.
Thank you.
That sounds
now,
like
Now, what are you two football fans, though? What's your opinion on Michael Vick, on whether he should have been reinstated?
Enough with
anyone have a problem with that? Because I don't.
No, good Lord. I mean, look, I love dogs. I have a dog.
Right.
You know,
what's your dog's name?
Ripley.
Yeah, right.
Big dog fan. But Jesus Christ, I mean, these dogs we're talking about. If Michael Vick, if it's this much of a problem, then who's the, Dante Stallworth?
Mm-hmm. Who killed someone?
Apparently we should kick him out of the NFL for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. Who killed a human being, or Leonard Little, or anybody else. And then they should just deport the guy to Al-Qaeda, like, tomorrow afternoon or something like that.
Well, look at the reaction in Phoenix. I mean, I know it's all different things, but, man, the reaction with the guy in Chandler, the officer who loved his dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No one loved that dog more than the officer. It was a complete accident, and he left the dog in the car, and the dog died. friggin' prosecuted the guy, right. People up in arms, people yelling things at him, death threats and all right. that. And then we have the woman earlier in the year.
You leave a kid in the car, nobody cares.
No one cares. They don't care. But how about the woman at DOC? Who they leave her out in the heat, yeah. and she dies, and everybody's like, "Yeah, she was kind of a scumbag, though." You know?
Oh.
She's a human. She'd have been, what, maybe that dog was a scumbag. We don't know what about his
She'd
personal
have been
life.
A dog. That would have been, that would have been the end of it.
He might have been exactly. a real.
No, I don't have a problem. In our society, we say when you do something wrong, you're punished for it. He has been punished for it. He went to prison, paid the
right.
fine, all that. Now he gets a chance to come back and to rehabilitate himself. That's what our system is
exactly.
based on.
Exactly. What is
he
the
went
point?
To prison
if we
for
don't
2 years.
Him.
For heavens.
But
that
he went,
was a lot. Lost $135 million contract.
That was worse. I mean,
right. He's been punished.
Would you do? Would you go to prison? Prison. I mean, he was in Leavenworth.
Right.
Not good. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you, that's a good question. How about this one? Would you do 2 years in Leavenworth for $135 million?
Well, can I be in solitary the entire
no.
time? I mean, would I have
no.
to be in Gen Pop? I mean,
no,
I don't wanna...
whatever he was. You don't have, oh, no guarantees. Okay. You might just be in there man. With Bubba. Who knows?
Can I get Phil Gordon's security detail?
You get nothing. Would you do
no.
it?
135.
That's a lot
I would
money.
Be tempted.
That's a lot of, yeah, that's
yeah.
a lot of jam.
2 years out
Two
of your
years.
Life yeah. for the rest of your life.
The rest of your life, you're set.
I would consider it.
Yeah.
I can't say definitely yes, but I would consider it. For $135 million?
You Powerball. It would go to Leavenworth.
Powerball hasn't worked out, so yeah.
No. That's a debt.
Powerball's up to like $240.
It is.
Like that, right?
Hey, I will say one thing on the Michael Vick thing, though.
Yes.
I was a little bit disappointed with the interview by James Brown last night.
I had the exact
minutes.
Opposite reaction.
I thought he was pressing too much. And
no,
I like
really
JB. I think JB is.
Reaction.
No, I think JB is one of the best in the business. I thought for the Mea Culpa interview, he should have done somebody. You know, like a Tim Russer type out there. Like maybe
I don't know if you know this, but he's dead.
No, I know that. I'm saying a Tim Russer type.
Like a dead guy.
Actually, avoid the...
Then how about...
No, avoid the sports interview
how about
type.
Ned Foster?
And how about Mike Wallace?
There you go.
Ned Foster.
he's like a dead guy. Come on.
Oh, that's rough.
No, but avoid the sports interviewer and do, yeah. you know, like the real... You know, like a...
Well, you wouldn't do that if you're Michael Vick. You want a soft interview.
Doesn't Vic seem like well,
you do Larry King?
No, JB is a very good interview, and I love
Larry
his work,
King
but I just didn't.
I think that's probably coming up. You yeah. know? And Larry King will be like, so do you have a dog now?
Yeah, no, right. What's his name?
I thought Oprah might be a good one for him to go on.
Yeah, I would have gone on Larry King. I would have avoided 60 Minutes. What's the point?
No, the point
I
is...
Vic, I
he did all right.
Did okay.
I thought Vic
yeah.
did great.
But he
seemed
appears,
very sincere.
He appears to be like manically depressed mm-hmm. or something. Like his facial expression... never changes. Like when he's talking about, like, I lost my career,
right.
or he's talking
right,
about,
right.
you know, I'm just crying in prison.
Up.
I mean, he's just literally like, whoosh.
Okay.
Maybe he's just on a bunch of...
Remember this. Remember the, okay, the little dilemma you had in your own mind, would I go to prison,
yeah. mm-hmm.
go to Leavenworth for... He went and lost $135 million.
Talk about 0 for 2.
That's not good. Okay, so you'd be depressed.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
depressing.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, I would be. Okay. Now, I want to tell you, I went to the... Dodger series over the weekend, and or I went to the Friday and Saturday. Decided to skip Sunday. They got cream Sunday. It was great, except for all the Dodger fans, which are just the
it's like Lakers. It's like
people.
Laker fans.
They're pretty much the same ilk. I hate any team from L.A. But the Dodger fan. If you want to sum up the Dodger fan, just picture Fernando Valenzuela. In a friggin' Dodger T-shirt, drunk.
Right. And that's size medium.
Yeah, 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 size medium.
Although
he's
a size
extra
XL.
Large. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Gross. I mean, they're the worst. But anyway, so Friday was great. Saturday, fantastic. We beat them with back-to-back homers in the bottom of the ninth. Came back, beat them in the tenth. But the one thing I got to
stick
mention,
around till the tenth.
I did. Yeah,
he's loyal.
Well, I had
that
faith.
Dedication.
I had faith, and they came back. Seth Sulka, I believe, left. Before the two back-to-back home runs, weak person that he is, and blamed his children. That's weak. Okay,
I would have done the
there.
Same thing.
No,
about the seventh inning, I would have said, "I'm catching."
No,
my
no,
kids.
No. You know, did I think we were going to hit back-to-back homers off Broxton? No, not necessarily, but we did. But here's so that was great. But here's the point: Kuroda getting hit.
Oof.
This thing, I have never seen anything like that in my life.
That was vicious.
I mean, this kid yeah. Ryle hits. I mean, as hard a hit line drive as you can hit up the
yep.
middle, and nothing gets in the way, hits Kuroda right in the temple, and this is the thing that blew me away. The ball caromed off his head all the way toward the on the third base side into the stands. Think about that. The ball hit his head so hard, it went into the stands for a ground rule double. Sick. And he was down and out. And that's the stadium, which had about 45,000 people in it downtown, went from
dead silent.
Dead silent for about 10 minutes. It was stunning.
I can't remember a weekend where I saw more people get hit by a pitch, hit by a line drive.
Just weird. But this thing here, I mean, and David Wright, you know, that was anytime you get hit in the head. But he had a helmet on.
Yeah.
This thing was sick. Yeah. That was I don't know how fast that ball's going. It's got to be going over 100 miles an hour.
You'd
coming
think,
back
yeah.
to the temple so hard that it bounces into the stands, and he was released the next day.
You got to be lucky you're not dead.
I thought he might be dead. I'm serious.
Yeah.
And the sound it made, kind of like just disgusting melon-type sound. Horrible.
I was there the day that Randy Johnson hit that pigeon.
Were you?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Took a bunch of listeners down to Tucson.
Yeah.
For a big KTAR field trip.
Perfect.
And so Johnson kills this bird. This huge just puff of feathers explodes.
There was no bird left, right?
It was nothing.
No.
Yeah. But
disintegrated.
But on the way back, it was like all we could talk about for 2 hours.
Oh,
it was
the
fastest 2-hour ride up I-10 ever. But did you see the bird? It was just the bird exploded everywhere.
You know what? That just shows you that's a great thing about sports. But baseball, I love baseball. And if you would have told me, frankly, until Kuroda got hit, it was kind of a boring game.
Yeah.
And if you would have told me the ending before, you know, something's going to happen in this game that you're going to remember the rest of your life, I would have said, what? I doubt that, you know. But it did. I'll never forget that as long as I live. That was insane. And same thing there.
Yep.
You remember it vividly, right?
Absolutely.
To have Randy Johnson throw a fastball and obliterate a bird.
Had that been Michael Vick, he would have been prosecuted. Right there.
The one for me that I remember happened at Sun Devil Stadium about 10 years ago when Aeneas Williams laid out Steve Young and ended his career that night. Because for like 5 minutes, he was laying on the turf, not moving. And I thought, this one is really serious.
It can happen. Obviously, people have been paralyzed. And now we see with these head injuries and concussions, things we didn't know before, that people... You got to really treat it seriously. Even if they seem to be okay, they may actually not be. But
yeah, Natasha Richardson earlier this year. That was stunning.
I've been reading a book about brain imaging lately, and it's really interesting how much even a relatively mild head injury can linger along and linger along and linger along and change the function of your brain. And that changes your personality, changes mood and things like that, and certainly changes your health.
And you've got to wonder if with like a guy like Muhammad Ali, if that hasn't played a role in where he's today.
Of course it has.
Because I remember covering him like 20
years. It was the Foreman deal, the rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
You cannot have George Foreman doing that to your brain.
Yeah.
Those fights against Frazier. I mean, sometimes you catch those like on ESPN
They're
classic.
They're unbelievable.
But the amazing thing is you see Frazier, and he's in way better shape.
Right. Yeah, he is. That's why I say I think it was the Foreman.
The Foreman fight, yeah.
Because
it makes sense.
Those punches were so powerful, and he just let him punch him in the head. That was the deal, It was sick.
Yeah, because I covered Ali like about 20 years ago. And I saw him, he went to the school back in Michigan. And I'm watching him, and I'm going like, is he drunk? Because that's before anybody realized.
Onset.
Yeah, and that was really the onset. And it's like I was talking to a couple people. It's like, and they were kind of like, well, you just don't worry about it. He's fine. It's like,
hockey players who have all these concussions. And they want to go back out. But, I don't know. So,
you get like 3, 4, 5,
you
got to
stop.
Yeah, it's over.
It's time to cash in your chips.
Okay, I have one last question for you, Lebo. Are you you're going to start your own business? So that's by the way, we're open for clients, right?
Sure.
They can talk to you. Okay.
LebowitzSolo.com.
Okay, is that it?
Well, here, the idea was this. Everybody's telling me, first of all, you got to use your name. People know your name, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, just call it like Leibowitz and Associates. Sounds kind of half-assed because, I don't really have any associates officially. And besides, I thought I got to come up with something that sounds like a partner, So I was having a conversation, and I thought, that Han Solo really is like the coolest character in Star Wars, and Napoleon Solo from Man from U.N.C.L.E. when we were kids. And I thought, okay, so Leibowitz Solo makes it sound like I've got a partner. And then if people say to me, so who's this Solo? So if Mom Solo. I got no partners. So I feel like it's got a good, it's
like
got some cachet. So LebowitzSolo.com.
Okay. Do we also do a LebowitzSolo.com for those of us who know for a long time?
I own all those URLs, Clausen. Don't think you're going to try to pull a fast one.
Damn.
You're not going to pull a fast one on me. Yeah,
I was going to go on GoDaddy tonight. It's
gotcha. I got them all locked down, buddy. Don't you worry about it.
Okay. All right. Well, now that you're a little little more free. Maybe we can have you come back.
And, I'd love to. I love this. This is a great little, deal. I saw your. I'm a Facebook fan of yours. You're up to like 650 fans.
How about that, huh?
Gotta love that.
Let's go. Spread the word. That's the only way we can grow. We don't advertise or anything else. So
that's very cool.
It's neat. Down here at Marley's, and of course Marley's has helped us out a lot. And by the way, where is that? In Goodyear? Is that the Goodyear Marley's? If you haven't checked that out, apparently even the opening in the heat of summer, it has been knocking them dead out there.
Was that the one at Chandler? That's a nice place.
That's
really
great.
Nice.
Chandler's always been great. Downtown's great, and now out of Goodyear, and of course Anheuser-Busch. The Hensley Company has been really great to us all along the way, so we appreciate that. All right, we'll see what happens this week, and appreciate everybody tuning in and, you know, emails. Let us know what you think. And, again, you can follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. And, again, let us know what you think. Is that a show?
That's a show.
That's a show. All right, we did it.